Well, today's story is one a lot of you are going to know, I think. It's like a lot of the children's stories, it says everything I have to say today, but I'll ask you to stay for the sermon anyway. It's all here in Green Eggs and Ham. And with this time, we're gonna keep this children's story on our recording for the website for later, because the story and the sermon, they're just the same thing. So, Green Eggs and Ham, you all know how it starts. I am Sam. He's got his sign. He's declaring, I am Sam. Who's this kind of worried about Sam? Who's this guy who's letting me know who he is? Sam, I am. Sam, I am. That Sam, I am, that Sam, I am. I do not like that Sam, I am. Do you like green eggs and ham? I do not like whom Sam I am. I do not like green eggs and ham. Some of you probably have this memorized. Would you like them here or there? Some of you do have it memorized. Some of you probably have sensitivity in your fingers that lets you turn pages quicker than I do. I would not like them here or there. I would not like them anywhere. I do not like green eggs and ham. I do not like them, Sam, I am. I see more and more mouths repeating the words. Would you like them in a house? Would you like them with a mouse? I do not like them in a house. I do not like them with a mouse. I do not like them here or there. I do not like them anywhere. I do not like green eggs and ham. I do not like them, Sam, I am. Would you eat them in a box? Would you eat them with a fox? Not in a box, not with a fox, not in a house, not with a mouse. I would not eat them here or there. I would not eat them anywhere. I would not eat green eggs and ham. I do not like them, Sam, I am. Could you in a car? Eat them. Here they are. I would not, could not, in a car. You may like them. You will see, you may like them in a tree. I would not, could not, in a tree, not in a car. You let me be. I do not like them in a box. I do not like them with a fox. I do not like them in a house. I do not like them with a mouse. I do not like them here or there. I do not like them anywhere. I do not like green eggs and ham. I do not like them, Sam, I am. A train. Could you on a train? Who doesn't love trains? They make everything taste good. Not on a train, not in a tree, not in a car. You let me be. I could not, would not, could not in a box. I could not, would not with a fox. I will not eat them with a mouse. I will not eat them in a house. I will not eat them here or there. I will not eat them anywhere. I do not like green eggs and ham. I do not like them, Sam, I am. Say it. In the dark? How do you know they're green? Right? Here in the dark. Could you in the dark? I would not, could not in the dark. Could you in the rain? I would not, could not in the rain, not in the dark, not on a train, not in a car, not on a tree, not in a house. I do not like them, Sam, you see, not in a house, not in a box, not with a mouse, not with a fox. I will not eat them here or there. I do not like them anywhere. You do not like green eggs and ham? I do not like them, Sam, I am. That should be over, right? Would you with a goat? I would not, could not with a goat. Could you on a boat?
Yes.
There's an enthusiast. I could not, would not on a boat. I will not with a goat. I will not eat them in the rain. I will not eat them on a train. Not in the dark. Not in a tree. Not in a car. You let me be. I do not like them in a box. I do not like them with a fox. I will not eat them in a house. I do not like them with a mouse. I do not like them here or there. I will not eat them anywhere. I do not like green eggs and ham.
They're all in the water.
They've all fallen in the water. The great sea that tends to bring us together. I do not like them, Sam I am.
How can you talk underwater?
You do not like them. So you say, try them. Try them and you may. Try them and you may, I say. Well, Sam, if you will let me be, I will try them. You'll see. It's good to have an open mind, huh? Look at him. I do. I like them, Sam I am. And I would eat them in a boat. And I would eat them with a goat. And I will eat them in the rain and in the dark and on a train and in a car and in a tree. They are so good, you see. So I will eat them in a box and I will eat them with a fox. I will eat them in a house. I will eat them with a mouse and I will eat them here and there. Say, I will eat them anywhere. I do so like green eggs and ham. Thank you. Thank you. Good morning. This is going to be my third sermon in a row with Jesus in it. Can you believe that? I never would have thought I had to make a comment. Back in the fall, I did three from the Hindu tradition in a row, and I knew I didn't need to say anything, but just don't worry. Don't worry. I think you'll understand. Jesus was speaking to a crowd, and behold, a lawyer stood up to put him to the test, saying, "Teacher, what shall I do to inherit eternal life?" He said to him, "What's written in the law? How do you read?" And the lawyer answered, "You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart and all your soul, with all your strength, with all your mind, and your neighbor as yourself." It's kind of like green eggs and ham, a series of things here. And your neighbor as yourself. Here our lawyer quotes from Leviticus, one of the five books that form the core of Jewish law, called the Torah, where it's also written in Leviticus 19, "You shall not oppress your neighbor or rob him. The wages of a hired servant shall not remain with you all night till morning. You shall not curse the deaf or put a stumbling block before the blind. You shall do no injustice in judgment, and you shall not be partial to the poor or defer to the great, but in righteousness shall you judge your neighbor. You shall not go up and down as a slanderer among your people, and you shall not stand forth against the life of your neighbor. You shall not hate your brother in your heart, but you shall reason with your neighbor. You shall not take vengeance or bear any grudge against your own people, but you shall love your neighbor as yourself." Trusting now that the lawyer knows the law, Jesus says tentatively, "You've answered right. Do this and you will live." But the lawyer, desiring to justify himself, said to Jesus, "And who is my neighbor?" The lawyer wants to place some limits on just who can be called a neighbor. I don't know if they had air quotes then, but he's hoping to catch Jesus with that business about your own people. And Jesus knows it. So he jumps from talking law right into a story, one of the most famous in the whole New Testament. Jesus replied, "A man was going down from Jerusalem to Jericho, and he fell among robbers who stripped him and beat him and departed, leaving him half dead. Now by chance, a priest was also going down that road, and when he saw him, he passed by on the other side. So likewise a Levite, when he came to the place and saw him, passed by on the other side.
But a Samaritan, as he journeyed, came to where he was, and when he saw him, he had compassion. And he went to him and bound up his wounds, pouring on oil and wine. Then he set him on his own beast and brought him to an inn and took care of him. And the next day he took out 2 denarii and gave them to the innkeeper, saying, take care of him. That was a denarius, was a day's wage. Right? So two days' wages. He said, take care of him to the innkeeper. Whatever more you spend, I'll repay you when I come back. Which of these three, do you think, proved neighbor to the man who fell among the robbers? The lawyer said, the one who showed mercy on him. And Jesus said, go and do likewise. Go and do likewise. I hope that sounds like music to your ears. I know that this will. Deborah? Up a little bit. How's that?
Yeah.
Is that volume good? Sorry, it was kind of bent down before. There we go. You know, you remember our guest last week, Dr. Vivian Jacoto and her sister Hilda. We met for a couple of hours before that service earlier in the week to talk about things, and discovered we'd all been raised Presbyterian, not exactly knowing why. But we'd had our time and our training back then. So leafing through our family Bible one day when I was still an early reader, my eye fell on the story that I just told you about Jesus and the lawyer. It had a heading that looked to me like the story of the good Sam Martian. A Martian in the Bible, like in my cartoon shows? I wasn't sure what a Sam Martian might be. Sam sounded so familiar and American, and Martian so alien, but it all sounded pretty cool to me, like a combination of Yosemite Sam and Marvin the Martian. So I had to look at it a few times before realizing that I'd made a mistake, and here we were back in dry, old, boring, dusty Israel from Sunday school, the classroom next to the furnace, instead of dry, red, dusty Mars. Shoot. I wanted to read about aliens, man. Which is really what we find in the story, sort of. Samaritan, with its capital S and the rest that looks like Martian to a new reader, seems to indicate an alien. Someone set apart from the regular people in the rest of the story. Somebody really, really different. But that's not really true. Samaritans are also Hebrews with the same roots as the Jews. Their religious practices are very similar. Samaritans also have their Torah, which is mostly the same as the Jewish one, including those words from Leviticus about loving your neighbor as yourself. Perhaps the most striking difference is that whereas Jews are told to worship God on Mount Zion in Jerusalem, for Samaritans, it's Mount Gerizim near the West Bank city of Nablus. Neither mountain, I have to tell you, is very big, but there's another mountain that you should know about. The Hebrew Bible is called the Tanakh, an acronym for Torah Vaneveim Vaketuvim, Torah, Prophets, and Writings. Samaritans accept the authority of the Torah only, just the first five books, Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, and Deuteronomy, but not those other texts. So when printed as a book rather than a scroll, it has roughly 353 pages versus 1,574 pages for that mountain of a book that Christians call the Old Testament. The name Samaritan comes from the Hebrew word shomer, or keeper, the same as in those famous words, "Am I my brother's keeper?" Hashomer achi anoki, in Hebrew. Samaritans see themselves as keepers of the original law. A few remain in Israel today. And indeed, they see themselves as those who remained in Israel while many of their brothers and sisters were taken as captives to Babylon. When they returned, they brought back a much larger holy book than what they'd left with. And that's a problem for the Samaritans, who think that these extra books have contaminated the original. What does that mean? It's hard to be certain. Maybe, like the people who brought them back to Israel, these texts seem to be marred by resentment, envy, filled with a terrible sense of injury, and even an urge to imitate the Babylonian captors. It's not that the Samaritans saw nothing to admire in these new books like the Prophets, Proverbs, and Ecclesiastes. Many people, even non-believers like me, love certain Psalms for their beauty, especially the 23rd with its comforting promise of a good shepherd who guides us through fear and pain. But there are also many Psalms like this one. I brought this one up in the fall. It starts sweet and sorrowful, but soon moves into fantasies of shocking violence. You'll probably recognize it. By the waters of Babylon, we sat down and wept at the memory of Zion. On the poplars in the midst thereof, there we had hung our harps. Remember, Lord, it continues, against those people and how they said, tear it down to the ground. Here the psalmist laments the destruction of the great temple of Jerusalem before he continues, daughter of Babel, doomed to destruction, a blessing on anyone who treats you as you treated us. Happy is he who seizes your babies and shatters them against a rock. There is beauty in these books, to be sure, and many blessings, but to grasp them, you often have to reach through the tangled thorns of ethnic curses, hatred, and rage. And these are not just emotions, remember. They all have to be practiced and perfected, like skills of a sort. You can imagine how some who brought these skills back from Babylon would be tempted to turn them against their neighbors after they got home, whenever things got tense. That's what happened when angry mobs destroyed the Samaritans' temple on Mount Gerizim, just like the Babylonians had done to the Jewish temple in Jerusalem. I don't know if those people acted spontaneously or if some populist leader had stirred them up, but I don't want to stray from the road into too much Samaritan history. Okay. When Jesus tells this story, he's doing imaginative work. He's playing off both real history and a popular image of the Samaritan as a long-term neighbor who has suddenly come to seem as strange as any Martian. Let's go back now to the side of that dry and dusty road. A man was going down from Jerusalem to Jericho, and he fell among robbers, who stripped him and beat him and departed, leaving him half dead. Maybe he met up with a group of guys who seemed okay at first, people just like him, who spoke the same language and maybe gave signs of practicing the same religion. Sometimes we trust the wrong people because they seem to be our kind. Anyway, after they've left their victim by the road, there can be no doubt what kind of man he is. The story draws our attention to his nakedness for a reason. We'll understand that in a moment. Now, by chance, a priest was going down that road, and when he saw him, he went over and passed by on the other side. So likewise a Levite, when he came to the place and saw him, passed by on the other side. What did the priest know for certain about the naked man? Any guesses? Well, he knew that the man was circumcised, like no Greek or Roman would have been. The Bible would have told us if he was another Samaritan who also practiced circumcision, so he must be a Jew, like the priest himself, and of course, like Jesus, who's telling the story, and the lawyer who's listening. So there he lies, naked, bloody, dirty, dishonored. Maybe he's dead, and the priest's not touching that. He's from the top of the social order, and he's supposed to stay ritually pure at all times. Besides, his attackers could still be nearby watching, so better get out of the way. Better leave him there. Religion is no help today. So the priest just keeps on walking. Now here comes the Levite. Though not a priest from himself, he's from that topmost class that produces them. They don't farm lands themselves. But they're sort of like everybody's landlord, entitled to a tithe from the soil of every non-Levite, 10% of all that they produce. They then tithe to support the priests, who are like sort of like the cherry on top of society's cream. The guy in the ditch, what's he? A crumb that's dropped from the cupcake. No concern to me. So the Levite lets him lie. So wealth and privilege pass him by. No more help than religion was before. But our story continues like a fairy tale where things come in threes. So now here comes the Samaritan who sees the man and has compassion and went to him and bound up his wounds, pouring on oil and wine. Then he set him on his own beast and brought him to an inn and took care of him. And the next day he took out 2 denarii, 2 days' wages, and gave them to the innkeeper, saying, "Take care of him, and whatever more you spend, I'll repay when I come back." So the Samaritan doesn't just provide triage or first aid. He tries to set up something that will keep going, a program of compassionate care. That's the story that Jesus tells the lawyer. And now he asks him, "Which of these three do you think proved neighbor to the man who fell among the robbers?" The lawyer said, "The one who showed mercy on him." And Jesus said to him, "Go and do likewise." Notice that he never tells the lawyer that he never should have asked, "Who's my neighbor?" It's a question you can ask. While I was working on this sermon, I got an email from a member of a UU church way across the country asking if I could arrange some kind of help for a friend with health issues who was moving to this area, someone who I'd never met, who never visited us, or maybe any of our congregations. Note didn't say anything about a UU. And at first I thought, just what I need when I'm here trying to work on my Good Samaritan sermon. I'm sure you don't want me spending my time and your money trying to help just anyone and everyone, even if they're not one of us, right? Right? It's not an easy question. But it is okay to wonder aloud about who is our neighbor and who is not, and to wait for some clarification to come from within or from outside of yourself. If you have another idea about who your neighbor is, come right out and say it. If you have a better plan to help, let's hear that too. What's not okay is to cross the road and just pass by in silence. That's not okay for Jesus, and it's not okay for you. It doesn't matter what your religion is. He reminds us of that as he reminds the lawyer. Just take your stand at the side of the road alongside the Good Samaritan. More imaginative work, right? Let's do some ourselves. Let's imagine that as we stand there, as we stand here, a twin shadow falls on the scene. The priest and the guy from the landlord class have returned. They're furious at what the Samaritan is doing. Maybe they feel shamed now or embarrassed by it since they themselves have done nothing to help. Or maybe they just feel that guys like the fallen man owes his support to guys like them, not guys like the Samaritan. Let someone turn off your phone. You want to turn it off? Someone has a T-Mobile phone ringing? We all know that ring. Okay. Now, we're just talking about shame. Don't feel any shame. We all make mistakes. Remember our covenant. We will stumble. We will stumble. I guarantee I will stumble once or twice before this sermon is over. Okay, so they feel that guys like the fallen man owes his support to guys like them, not guys like the Samaritan. I wouldn't accept this help if I were you, says the priest. Think about your own ritual purity, brother. You want to let one of them touch you? Those people aren't clean. The oil, the wine, those denarii he's providing for the long-term care, they're dirty, just like Samaritans themselves. Unclean, foreign, strange, like something from another world. He's not helping you. He's trying to weaken, pollute, and destroy you because that's what they do. Now the man feels uncertain, looking from one face to another. He's feeling a little better already, but still weak and groggy. How can he decide? The priest and the landlord have played the Samaritan card well. It's an effective trump card that often works to turn the game in your favor. Now the landlord pulls another one from up his sleeve, the up-down card. Hey, buddy. Don't you see how this guy's been looking down on you? Says the guy who lives on the work of others, who's never calloused his hands to earn a day's denarius. Don't you notice how he's put himself above you? You don't need help from someone who thinks that he's better than you. I heard Kathy Bates, incredible Kathy Bates, say this something like this once in a movie. She was playing a physical therapist whose patient was feeling down and was angry that she wasn't feeling down. She said, "I can't help you out of a hole if I climb in with you. Then we're both stuck. Then we're both stuck." I know we sometimes feel resentment toward those who try to help us. But how can they help if we pull them down too? As to their attitude, what's wrong with someone trying to conduct him or herself like someone you can look up to? Someone who's not always acting outraged, bitter, and burned. Yes, the Samaritan himself seems to be doing pretty well. Maybe he is proud of being someone to look up to. Maybe he shouldn't look so elegant and self-assured. Maybe his educated confidence is a problem for you. Maybe perfect Samaritans never look down, so nobody feels looked down on. But our Samaritan is good, not perfect. And he's done the best he can with the resources at hand. Oil, wine, his own hard-working donkey, and a reasonable amount of Roman currency. Paid to the inn. I don't know if you could call it a state-of-the-art hospital, but the innkeeper seems willing, so let's go with it. Maybe there are better ways to help, but this seems like a decent start, and it was high time for someone to do something. And maybe you've heard that over 12.2 million Americans signed up for health coverage under the Affordable Care Act during the first month of our current administration. Over 64% of them came from states that voted for leaders who had vowed to do away with the act, which was associated with a name that sounds so foreign and strange that it could only have been Martian, the work of little green men or worse. But suddenly, they found they like green eggs and ham, even if they really come from Mars or Kenya. What an embarrassment that's been to those who set out to destroy it. Maybe they should have just changed its name to Romney Care, from the kind of guy you can trust with straight white teeth and great straight hair. I get that some might think it's better to put a couple of extra denarii in people's pockets to buy that oxycodone or maybe some wine to drink instead of pouring it on their wounds. Whatever it takes to get them through the terrible pain of their daily lives. But others are simply determined to take away care they believe should never have been given in the first place. Care that we should never have offered each other. We the people, right? I don't know how people who call themselves Christians can support those leaders' plans. I'm sure they've got it worked out in their heads and would be happy to slap it into mine. Since I'm not a Christian, I guess I don't know as much about Jesus as they do. But here's what I do know. I know that he stands with the Samaritan on the side of the road and wants us to stand there too. If someone says, that's no good, nothing can come from a Samaritan, and you buy that brand of talk, next time it won't be about Samaritans. It'll be someone else, then someone else, then someone else, till there's no one you can trust but people just like you. And who's exactly like me? But only me, myself. Who will be the last Samaritan when I'm all alone? What if there's only me? Look at how so many of us take care of ourselves. What kind of poison might I pour on my wounds when I am my own Samaritan? You needn't look far to see what a poor neighbor I can be to myself. But maybe you will be the last shomer, the keeper who finds his brother beaten, naked, wounded, down. Will you help him to his feet? I have to warn you, he might resent it for a moment. No more than that, I hope. And I hope you'll understand.